Golden State Media Concepts bring you Book Review Podcast, a haven for bookworms of all ages and the widest genres, from mystery to memoirs, romance to comedy, fantasy to sci-fi. If you love to read, this is the podcast for you. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I am your host, Sarah, and I am excited to be with you again. I hope you had a great weekend. Hope you're having a good week so far. It's Tuesday. It actually feels like a Tuesday. That's pretty amazing. It actually feels like the day that it is. That doesn't often happen to me. So I hope you're having a wonderful week. I hope you're having a fabulous Tuesday. We are enjoying some rain here in Northern California, which we desperately need. So that is good. I am excited, as always, to join you and to bring you another author interview and another giveaway. I hope you've been going on to social media to sign up for the giveaways that we've had so far. We had two last week, and we have a third this week. This interview is with author Debbie Burke, and her book is Instrument of the Devil. I have three signed copies to give away, so if, as you're listening to this interview, you think, hey, that book sounds really good, I want to read it, you should definitely listen to the end of the interview and find out how you can win a signed copy of Instrument of the Devil. So let's get to talking about the book, and then we can proceed to that interview with Debbie. So, Instrument of the Devil. This is the blurb from the back of the book. When technophobic widow Tawny Lindholm receives a baffling new smartphone as a gift, a dashing stranger helps her navigate its mysteries. But while romancing her, Khalil Sharivar is actually a terrorist who drags her into a plot to sabotage the power grid by cyber attack on Montana's Hungry Horse Dam. Soon the feds are chasing her and her family is in danger. Tawny must find a way to turn the instrument back on the devil himself. Otherwise, when the lights go out, she dies. That is the description of the book, Instrument of the Devil. And I'm just going to say, you're going to hear me in the interview anyway, I'm just going to say, you've heard me say before that I'm from Montana, so getting to interview another Montana author and have this set in a place that I have spent a lot of time in my life, Kalispell, Montana, was very fun. I loved that aspect of it. It made me completely nostalgic. And I love the title also, Instrument of the Devil, because when I saw that, and I knew this book was a thriller, so I was like, Instrument of the Devil, okay, this sounds, you know, something to do with the plot, and it is, but it's a little more tongue-in-cheek, because Tawny, the main character, receives this gift of a smartphone. The book takes place in 2011. She's not had a smartphone before. She has a flip phone that she's perfectly happy with. She gets this smartphone and she starts calling it Lucifer, and it is the instrument of the devil. So I love the tongue-in-cheek title that also plays into more, because the smartphone does play a role in this plot. So it has more than one meaning, but I like Debbie's sense of humor in that Tawny calls her phone Lucifer, and she's always talking to it and yelling at it, and I sympathize. I talk to my phone all the time, and not because it has, you know, Alexa or whatever, Siri or any of those things. No, I just talk to it and say, why aren't you doing what I want you to do? Don't do the button I pushed. Do what I want you to do. Yeah, so I talk to my phone. I'm from Montana, and I talk to my phone. I think it's time to turn to the interview with Debbie Burke, because we can talk about the book and not about my strangeness. So we will turn now to the interview with Debbie Burke, author of Instrument of the Devil. Hi, Debbie. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Sarah.
Well, it's wonderful to have you here, and we are here to talk about your book, The Instrument of the Devil. But before we do that, I would love for my listeners just to get to know you a little bit. So if you could tell us something about your life, whatever you're comfortable sharing.
Well, I was born in San Diego and lived there until 1988 and moved to Montana. And at that point, I was able to, been working and, had our own business and so on. And so I wasn't able to write, even though I'd started wanting to write in about the third grade. And but I was able to take some classes and attend some conferences and started writing full time, and have been at it ever since. Done a lot of magazine articles, a lot of nonfiction, wrote a number of novels, which got many, many rave rejections. And I had lots of close flirtations with agents and editors, but never quite could get over that last hurdle. Last year, I found out about the Kindle Scout contest and entered it and was awarded a publishing contract as a result. And my book was my 10th novel was finally published. So I'm one of those overnight successes that only took 30 years.
Nice. You know, you are the third interview in a row that has talked about the Kindle Scout program. So that is really amazing.
Really? Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, it's still not terribly well-known, but it is getting much more well-known, and they're having a lot more entries. For instance, when I was in it last summer, I think there were a total of maybe 275 books that were up in the contest at that point. A friend of mine just finished a campaign, and there were over 400 books.
Oh, wow.
So it's gaining in popularity.
Yeah, that's wonderful because it seems like a really good opportunity.
It is. You know, it's something that wasn't available. I think this is really an excellent time to be a writer. Over the years that I've been in it, this is the best time because there's so many different options for getting published. You don't have to go through the traditional route.
Yeah, well, thank you. So this book is Instrument of the Devil, and I love the title because of when you read the title, it makes you think of something, you know, sort of sinister. But it comes from what she calls her cell phone, which makes me laugh. Could you tell us a little bit about Instrument of the Devil, please?
Sure. And what gave me the idea for it was I got a smartphone about 4 years ago, my very first one, and it totally confounded me. It was making noises that I couldn't tell what the noise was. These screens would pop up that I hadn't called up. I didn't know what they were for. The screen would go absolutely blank, and I couldn't get it to light back up again. And it was doing all these crazy things. And I, of course, being a technophobe and not being familiar with smartphones, figured it was my fault. And I got thinking, well, you know, what if a bad guy decided to use a smartphone and set up an innocent victim as the scapegoat in a crime that he was pulling using the smartphone? Because as we now know, people can get into your smartphone and track your, track where you are, track what you buy, track who you're talking to, track those people. So it was one of those things that I thought, geez, what if a bad guy was taking advantage of it? And at the same time, I was also doing a lot of research on the vulnerability of the power grid. And I found out from documentaries and also Ted Koppel's book, which was called Lights Out, about the power grid, that a smartphone could actually access the internal computers in power generation and screw them up and cause the generators to essentially blow themselves up from the inside. And that would stop the electrical power from being generated. So, and as we found out in the news a couple of days ago, the Russians have been attempting to do exactly that with computer, cyber attacks. And so I put those two ideas together of a technophobic woman who's having a problem with her smartphone being set up by a terrorist who intends to bring down the electrical grid, and put those together, and the book was born.
Thank you. And yeah, it's pretty interesting because the main character, Tawny, lives in Kalispell, Montana, which is not exactly a bustling hub of much. So it's not a place that you would expect someone to be targeting a terrorist attack, but it does, you know, it does make sense once you know about the Hungry Horse Dam. So talk a little bit about the setting and why you chose to set it in Kalispell.
Well, the Hungry Horse Dam is like 55 stories tall. It's 560 something feet tall. It's huge, monumental monolith, and it supplies an amazing amount of the power to the Northwest, along with other power companies. And it's just this absolutely beautiful setting with forests and mountains around it and this big concrete monolith. And ever since I saw that dam, I've been wanting to pitch somebody off of it fictionally. You know, I thought, okay, this is a great scene for a murder, you know. For, and so that kind of played into, you know, the story because my terrorist has wormed his way into a job within the Hungry Horse Dam. And so he is, you know, using that opportunity to get, infiltrate and set up his cyber attack.
Mm-hmm. I hope you're enjoying the interview so far. I do have to jump in here for our first break of the podcast. When we come back, we'll be talking a little bit more about the book Instrument of the Devil, about its main character, Tawny, and then moving on to some other aspects of Debbie's writing career. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, and I will be right back.
Want to find out what movies to go see? Then check out the GSMC Movie Podcast. It's your ticket to the latest movies, whether it's a new blockbuster event, romantic, comedy, or action flick. This show has got it all covered. They talk some what to go see now. Don't bother. What's hot on Netflix and everything in between? That's gsmcpodcast.com/movie-podcast. When it's all about the movies, it has to be this new show. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Welcome back to the GSMC Book Review Podcast. I am speaking today with author Debbie Burke about her book, Instrument of the Devil. Before the break, we were talking about the setting of the book, the Kalispell area in Montana, the Hungry Horse Dam, and now we will be talking a little bit more about Tawny, the main character of this book. And so talk a little bit more about Tawny, your main character. What do you think it is about her that will resonate with your readers?
Well, I think a great many, I'm a boomer, Tawny's younger than I am, but I think a great many people who did not grow up with, you know, teething on a smartphone are going to feel that intimidation about technology. And they always figure, oh, I'm doing something wrong. Well, maybe not. Maybe something is, you know, defective about the phone, or something is, a hacker is getting into your system. And so that, I think that intimidation factor is going to play and does play a big part in the story. Everybody I talk to says, oh yeah, I've had a smartphone that did this and that, or my phone did, something else. And so I think it's a fairly universal problem, even among people who are more tech savvy than I am. So I think that resonates. There's a lot of, she has some problems with banking and money being put into her account as part of the means of setting her up. And I think banks have grown very, very impersonal, and you call into them to try and solve a problem, and you get on this voice phone tree merry-go-round, and you never can talk to a person. So I think that's going to resonate with people because, the corporate mentality is avoid the customer at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
Don't fix their problem. Just take their money, but don't fix their problem. And I think that resonates with a lot of people. And she is a widow, a recent widow, and I have her at 50, and I had four friends who were widowed in their 50s, and it was a tremendously, earth-shaking event for all of them, of course. And I had them beta read, and they gave me some insights. And I talked to a book club in Florida this last winter, and one of the ladies in there came up to me and said, I lost my husband in July, and everything you said, I totally identified with Tawny. Mm-hmm. And that made me feel really, really good because I felt like, okay, I got it right. And that's, I feel, as a writer, I feel an enormous responsibility to get things right and, be authentic to people's emotions and drives and fears. And I think that is coming through from the reader response I've had.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. So you've mentioned your own struggles with cell phones. are there other autobiographical elements in the story or the characters?
Not really. I mean, I live in Kalispell. I live in a small town. Some of the small town elements are, true to life. I have never, believe me, if I ever got in a terrorist clutches, I would just roll up in a ball and freeze, where Tawny has much better resources and, tricks up her sleeve than I would ever have.
So. Okay. And I just, because I'm from Montana, it was so much fun to read this book because I am familiar with the area. I grew up about an hour and a half away from Kalispell. But the part that I keep... that keeps making me laugh is that Kalispell, you keep referring to Kalispell as a small town, which it is. I mean, I live in California now, so I recognize that there are much, much, much bigger places. But when I was growing up, my hometown was about 1,000 people. So Kalispell was where we went. That's where my ophthalmologist was. And that was, they had a Dairy Queen. And
right.
McDonald's.
Hey, we got three McDonald's now.
Yeah. And so growing up, Kalispell was a city to me in my, small town mentality. So every time you talk about Kalispell as a small town, I just smile, which there's not a question in this. I just had to say that because it makes me laugh.
Right. Well, I came from a big city, San Diego. And so when we first moved here, I opened the paper one day, and the police blotter column says the police had been called to a woman who was complaining because her neighbor's dog came over and dug up her flowers, and the police actually responded. And at that point, I said, okay, we've moved to the right place.
Yes.
if this is how serious things are here, I'm in the right place.
You are not in San Diego anymore. That's
not
for
in
sure.
San Diego anymore, where we'd get broken into half a dozen times a year,
Yeah, oh, wow. So moving on from my nostalgia. You mentioned that you've written nonfiction, that you write a lot of articles. Can talk a little bit about what kind of nonfiction that you write?
Well, I'm not a specialist at all, except in writing writing craft articles, but I'll write about anything. I used to do a lot of magazine work, and I've written about everything from World War II history to pet assistance animals. I wrote a story about Canine Companions for Independence, about puppies that are raised to become service dogs. So I'll cover anything an editor would ask me to do, I would go do it. And as a result of that generalist attitude, I met a great many people and went a great many places that I would not have had an opportunity to do otherwise. And so I feel like that has really broadened my scope of knowledge and experience that helps when I'm writing fiction. So I didn't find at all a problem going from fiction to nonfiction and back and forth. I do continue to go back and forth. And now most of my writing, since magazines have mostly gone out of business, most of my writing is for online blogs and generally about the craft of writing, some aspect of that. I am a regular blogger on The Kill Zone, which is a crime writing website that has about a dozen authors who do thrillers and mysteries and cozies and dark, you know, dark suspense. You know, it's quite a broad range, and so it's fun. It's a lot of fun to write for them because you never know what in the. It's a daily blog, and I open it in the morning with my coffee, and you never know what's going to pop up there.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be somebody got herself sealed into a metal drum to do research for a victim that she was writing about in one of her novels.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And then somebody else will write about the time he met Fats Domino and, you know, was invited to Fats Domino's house. So it's a terrific blog. I highly recommend it. And I don't say this because I write for them, because I followed it for about 5 or 6 years before I was invited to write for them. And I got such an education from them about police procedure. There's an explosives guy who, you know, can tell you anything about blowing something up. There's, you know, so there's just a lot of good knowledge for anybody who is interested in writing crime-related fiction.
Thank you. I think for my part, I would much rather meet Fats Domino than seal myself into a metal drum for research.
Me too. Me too. She is quite an adventurous person.
Yes, she is. I mean, good for her.
Talk about authenticity.
Yes, ma'am. So what's next? Are you working on another book right now?
I have the second book in the series finished, and I'm editing it right now, and it deals with elder fraud, which is something that I think a lot of boomers are dealing with right now with their parents and themselves. There's a lot of people who, unfortunately, predators who will prey on older people and can do just horrific damage to their lives. And so that's kind of the theme that that is going on in this second book. And Tawny is sent to investigate her boss's father, who it appears to be a victim of elder fraud.
Okay. And do you have, can you share a title with us and a possible release date?
Yeah, I think the title is going to be Death by Proxy.
Okay.
And it's about a predator who is tapping into people's love for their pets as a way to get to their money. And the idea came about because my own adopted mother had been a victim of elder fraud with a caregiver. And then I was reading in a senior newspaper an ad about setting up a trust fund essentially for your pet in case your pet outlives you. And I thought, somebody who has, you know, is greedy could figure out a way to turn that into a scam to target elderly people who are trying to provide for their pets. And so that's what started the idea of the story and went from there. So.
OK. Okay. And you said it's the next one in the series. So are you planning on continuing this as a series with Tawny?
Yeah, I have a third book that's about half done first draft, and that's going to be dealing with teen suicide. So I don't like to, you know, my books are easy beach reads. They're not, you know, they're not anything profound, but I also like to incorporate some level of social awareness and current problems that are going on in our society. And I don't beat the drum over them at all, but they are kicking off points to kind of make people think. I don't want to, you know, it's not heavy philosophizing, you know, or trying to get a message across, but just to make people think and make people aware of problems like the vulnerability of the electrical grid, elder fraud, and teen suicide.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. You mentioned earlier that you have been writing since about third grade. So do you have advice for other authors, aspiring authors?
Well, one of the things that has helped me the most is to join a critique group. I have been in critique groups for the last 30 years, and I learn so much from other people's work. And when you're analyzing someone else's story, you start to recognize problems in your own that maybe if you just were reading your own story all by yourself in isolation, you would never see. But by reaching out and working on other people's work, you start to improve your own. And so I think a critique group is just tremendously helpful. Read books. One of the people of the Kill Zone is James Scott Bell, who is a superb writing teacher. He was the fiction columnist for Writer's Digest for a number of years, and he has a number of craft books out that are my Bibles. I think he's just a terrific teacher. Just take classes. One of the things my husband did for me was, instead of a regular birthday or Christmas present, I'd get a writer's conference for a present.
Oh, nice.
And it was wonderful. I would go to these conferences. I went to Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers. I went to Pikes Peak Writers Conference. Been to a number of them. And you learn so much about the inner workings at a conference. If you can at all afford it, that's something that I really advise writers to go to, because you really do learn the inner workings of the writing business, and it is a business, and it is different from any other business. So that's very helpful. And I just always say, don't give up and be professional. You know, meet your deadlines. If you're sending in something, make sure you've proofread it and you know, don't get anything sloppy. You know, just always professional, and you will develop a good reputation from that. And hang out with other writers.
Yeah, okay, thank you. It is time to take our second break of the podcast, but when we come back, Debbie will be speaking about the mentoring work that she has done with young authors, one young author in particular, and she has a really great mentoring story, so you don't want to miss that. Stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, and I will be right back.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be, visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the GSMC Book Review Podcast and the conclusion to my interview with author Debbie Burke. We are about to talk about her mentoring work, and she has a really great story about mentoring. I do want to give you a quick, I guess it's a warning. There is a tiny little bit of language coming up. Nothing terrible, no F-bombs, no nothing really, really bad. I just like to warn you about these things because we're a fairly clean podcast, but it's appropriate to the story, and it's, like I said, it's really not that bad. It's not vulgar. So consider yourself warned. Maybe you just want to, you know, steel yourself for a tiny bit of language. So as a follow-up question and somewhat related, you mentioned on your website that you also mentor other authors. So can you talk a little bit about your writing mentoring?
Yeah, that is just something that I have been so fortunate in my life to have a number of mentors who were very, very helpful to me. One of them is screenwriter Dennis Foley, who did MacGyver and Cagney and Lacey and China Beach. He did a lot of TV series in the 80s, and he moved to Montana and adopted our writers group, the authors of the Flathead, and became kind of an angel to us. And we're, you know, we can never do anything for him. He just helps us with his very professional training and teaching. And we kind of said, gee, Dennis, why do you do this? And he tells the story of when he was a young, struggling screenwriter in Hollywood. He didn't know what he was doing, and he was tasked with rewriting scripts overnight, and he did, but his mentor was Sterling Siliphant, who was Oscar and Emmy winning writer of things like In the Heat of the Night, and he was a great help to Dennis, and Dennis had called him up in the middle of the night and say, Sterling, what do I do about this? And Sterling would give him some advice. And finally, this went on for a long time, and finally Dennis said to him, Sterling, you've done so much for me. How can I repay you? And Sterling's answer was, pass it on. If you don't, you're an asshole. And so that has been Dennis's philosophy, and I think it is a wonderful philosophy. And I've tried to do the same thing because so many people have helped me. And one of the things that our writers group does is sponsor an annual student writing contest. And I've met some just wonderful kids through there, and one of them was a winner, and she, you know, 1 year, and she asked me if I would mentor her. And, of course, I said yes. You know, she's a brilliant, talented, enthusiastic, energetic young woman. And so, you know, we have maintained contact for many years now, and she went on to get her PhD in astrophysics from Harvard, for which I take absolutely no credit. but she also is a fiction writer, and she has sent me stuff, you know, sent me her application, sent me her article, sent me her grant applications and so on over the years. And at this point, I can only understand about three words in them, but I can tell her where to put the period or the semicolon. but that has been just a wonderful relationship that has been ongoing. And a couple months ago, she is now mentoring a young female physicist. And so that is neat to see where I, you know, I was helped. I passed it on to Sarah. Sarah passed it on to her, you know, next generation. And that's a really neat thing. And she's coming back to Kalispell to give the commencement address at the community college here this May. So that'll be wonderful. She's working in Scotland right now, but she's coming back to give that address. And she went to FVCC as a you know, undergrad. So it's kind of nice to see this full circle.
Thank you. Yeah, that's wonderful. And I kind of now want to cross stitch a wall hanging that says, pass it on. If you don't, you're an asshole.
I know. I think I'm going to cross stitch one someday.
I think you should. I like it. One thing that I just thought of as you were talking, when you said you understand about one word in three, one of the interesting things about Tawny is that she's dyslexic, and often writers tend to write heroines who love to read also. So I thought that was an interesting, it obviously plays into some of the plot, but that was an interesting choice for Tawny to be dyslexic and to really not have a love of reading.
Right. And she is, you know, you asked about autobiographical, and she is in many ways my opposite, because I did have a college education. I'm not dyslexic. I am fairly well read, and she is not. But this is something I have known a number of dyslexic people. I've had family members who were. So I have some familiarity with it. And one of the things that made her very vulnerable to this predatory terrorist who took her in is her sense of inadequacy because of dyslexia. And this is something I have known many dyslexics who are haunted by this well into their, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s. Mm-hmm. And they never quite get over this. They didn't do well in school. They could be very, very bright people who went on to very successful careers, but they never quite get over that feeling of, gee, I'm really dumb.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Tawny's father doesn't help telling her as a child that it's a good thing she's pretty because she sure is dumb.
Right, right. And I think, you know, I think that was that was why I made her dyslexic, because that was one other reason for her to be vulnerable. She was lonely because her husband had just died. She was technophobic, and she had this sense of inferiority.
Right.
And I think a lot of people, it may not be dyslexia, but I think most people have some sense of inferiority because of something from their early life.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. You are a reader. So what are some of your favorite authors and favorite genres?
Well, I ate Nancy Drew up like ice cream, you know, as a kid. And I think, and it's kind of cool. One of the people in the Kill Zone, Catherine Lilly, is, wrote Nancy Drew books earlier in her career. You know, she, wrote the part of the series, but they were much later than when I was reading them back, back in the 50s and 60s. But, I love Raymond Chandler. He's probably my all-time favorite writer. I like, basically mystery, suspense, thriller. I like history. I do read a lot of historical nonfiction. I don't have much time to read because most of the time I'm editing other people's stuff or my own stuff or, you know, working with my critique group. And so I don't have as much time to read as I would like. And it's kind of a guilty pleasure for me. You know, I feel like, oh, gee, I can only read when I haven't, you know, when I finished this article or when I've, you know, finished this draft or
mm-hmm.
whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things I don't get to read as much as I'd like to.
Right. Yeah. Well, you use it as a reward, which is probably better than ice cream.
Yeah.
Where can people find you on the internet? You have a website. What about social media?
Yeah, I do have a website, DebbieBurkeWriter.com, and I'm also in the Kill Zone regularly, and that's KillZoneBlog.com. And I have just barely dipped my toe into social media. I'm on Facebook, but have not gotten into Twitter or Instagram or any of the others. I'm doing kind of one thing at a time because, again, going back to the autobiographical element, I am somewhat intimidated by technology.
Sure. So.
And, well, social media can be a huge undertaking just in terms of the amount of things that you can do with it. And it's a lot. So I completely understand.
Yeah. And it becomes a huge time suck. You know, I can get lost on there. And I don't have time to write, and I'd rather write.
Yes. So.
I'm a little reticent to get too terribly much into it, even though more than half of my views during the Kindle Scout campaign came from Facebook, and that's what finally tipped me over the edge that I had to get into that if I wanted to do marketing. So I can see social media is very much a double-edged sword. And I'm trying to be a little careful about not getting turning into a Facebook addict like some people I know.
Yes. Well, you know, it's like any tool. It's got its pros and cons.
Exactly.
So is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you would like for people to know about your books, your writing, just anything that we haven't covered?
Well, it's available on Amazon.com, and it's available in ebook, or I do have a print version also. That's about it, I think.
Okay. Well, wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me to talk about this book and to let me be nostalgic about Montana. I appreciate that. And
well, come back and visit. We have a writing conference every September here, and so come back and visit.
Well, you don't need to twist my arm too hard on that one. So I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you again.
Great. Hey, thank you so much. Really enjoyed it.
As always, I so want to thank my guest for today, author Debbie Burke, for joining me to talk about her book, Instrument of the Devil. It was wonderful to chat with her. It was wonderful to read a book that was set in Montana and to talk to someone who lives in Montana and to see how many times I can cram the word Montana into one episode. I don't know. I didn't count. Maybe you did. Thank you to Debbie. Thank you, of course, to you. As part of that thank you, I do have these wonderful books to give away. I've been doing, this is the third giveaway that we're doing here at the GSMC Book Review Podcast. Debbie's books are signed, so signed by the author. I have three to give away. All you have to do, it's very simple, is go on to one of our social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Share the post on Facebook, retweet it on Twitter, or comment on Instagram. That's all you have to do. And if you want to give us a follow while you're there, that would be awesome. I would love it. If you would like to win one of three signed copies of The Instrument of the Devil by Debbie Burke, all you have to do is go onto Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram and either share, retweet, or comment, depending on the social media platform that it is. Thank you so much, my lovely listeners, for joining me once again. I hope that you will tune in on Thursday when I will be speaking with author Jerry Bronson about her debut novel, Seeking Perfect. Very different from Instrument of the Devil, which I like. I like the contrasts. This one is a young adult novel. It is a romance, and it's set in Oregon, so we're staying in the Pacific Northwest, but we are moving genres. So join me on Thursday for my interview with author Jerry Bronson. In the meantime, you can find all of our podcasts at www.gsmcpodcast.com. You can download those podcasts on iTunes, SoundCloud, really anywhere that you have an app for your podcast. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find, just type GSMC into the search bar and all of our podcasts will come up. You can follow us on social media, and of course you can go to social media to win copies of fabulous books that I have to give away lately. And we do have a blog that you can read a little bit more and find links to the author's web pages and their social media pages, etc. That blog is www.gsmcbookreview.blogspot.com. And if you don't feel like you can remember that, the link is in the description of the show as well as all of our social media links. So you don't even have to write anything down. You can just go to the description and find all of those links. Thank you. Thank you for joining me. I so appreciate you, my listeners. But now, get yourself out there and get yourself lost in a good book. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast. part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. From movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.